Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This program is sponsored by Every Dot Black Entrepreneurs Network. Our foundation scripture today comes from Acts, the 9th chapter, in verses 3, 4, and 6. As he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly a light shone around him from heaven. Then he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" So he, trembling and astonished, said, "Lord, what do you want me to do?" Then the Lord said to him, "Arise and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The Storytelling Time program this week is the first story coming from chapter 6, entitled Sandra's Damascus Road Experience. In the book, Heaven Can't Wait, or Can It? The sequel. The title of the program today is Sandra Follows Fred. Before we start with our story today, listen to the following suggestions on how to become a professional writer. It comes from a previous podcast. After this segment, we will start with our story for the week. The piece I want to share with you today is entitled 10 Ridiculously Simple Steps for Writing a Book. I'll give you two of these steps for each episode that we'll have in the coming weeks, beginning with the first two in today's podcast. The first step is decide what your book is about. Yes, this first step is so simple, but yet so important. And obviously, you want to select something that you enjoy talking about. And the second step I want to mention today is to set a daily word count goal. If you don't like the idea of keeping up with the number of words you're writing, just use a certain number of pages as a goal. It could be as little as one page a day or 10 or more pages a day. But whatever the number is, try to keep it consistent for each day. Our story of the week will start after the following break. Stay with us. Welcome back. After returning home from helping Maggie get her car functional again, Fred began to prepare for his MEFCO conference in 2 weeks. Maggie would return home from her parents' house later that night, as she told Fred she would do. As it turned out, Fred's thoughts of seeing Courtney the following weekend would not happen because Mincy had changed her mind about having a big birthday celebration on that weekend. Mincy had called Maggie earlier in the week and said to her, "Maggie, I've decided to have a nice, quiet time at home alone with Matthew, so you don't have to come up here this weekend." Fred would be at home in Central Heights the following weekend with Maggie, after all. Yes, Fred did not fulfill the hopes of seeing Courtney on this weekend, as he had planned. He would be home with Maggie. Due to these new circumstances, they would be able to socialize with the Manleys and attend church services with them on Sunday evening, as they usually would do. Yes, Fred was disappointed that he did not finish the conversation he had with Courtney at Ed's coffee shop, which was a result of Maggie calling him about her flat tire. So he never got a chance to express his desire to see her on that next weekend. Time will tell whether the feelings Fred had for seeing Courtney, for whatever reasons, would resurface. Meanwhile, Maggie certainly anticipated spending some time at home for a change instead of being a road warrior, you might say, running up and down the road to Flint. This was true especially given that her relationship with Freddie had apparently ended. Now Fred would be a warrior of the skies, that is, in a few days. He would take a flight from Chicago to Minneapolis, where his conference would be held the weekend following his unexpected time at home. On Thursday, the day of Fred's flight, Maggie left the daycare early to take him to the airport. Maggie would leave the chores of her business, as she usually did when she was away, to her assistant, Mary. When Maggie and Fred journeyed to the airport, the weather was typical of a wintry scene with snow all over the place. But even more snow was predicted to occur later in the region, including the Minneapolis area. Maggie soon left Fred at the airport terminal where he was ready for his flight. Despite the poor weather conditions, the flight was on time and was a smooth one. Eventually, Fred arrived at his destination. Upon landing in Minneapolis, Fred retrieved his luggage and secured a rental car, one of several older vehicles that were available. He then placed his belongings in it. Within a matter of moments, Fred became snuggled behind the wheel, then drove off from the airport. Despite the poor weather conditions, Fred was off to the hotel where his conference was to be held. Driving through all the wind-blown snow and treacherous road conditions was certainly a challenge for Fred. What made matters worse was that the GPS app on his cell phone had become disabled, so he had to rely on his knowledge of the area from a previous trip there. After driving for a while on this wintry day, Fred soon came to a fork in the road where he had two choices. One would be to veer to the right onto Damascus Way, but he knew that road would take him to St. Paul, the neighboring city next to Minneapolis. The other choice was a no-brainer. He was aware that the road to the left, Minnesota Expressway, would take him directly into downtown Minneapolis, his destination. So he took notice of the road signs indicating that motorists going to that city should take the expressway, and that's what he did. Fred drove another 10 miles and eventually came to where the conference would be held, which was on the campus of Minnesota University, downtown. Finally, he arrived at a residence inn on the campus, a facility that was designated to house graduate students at the university. But it was an all-purpose public place of lodging, so Fred could take advantage of that. The inn was nestled in a densely forested area, which had limited access. Fred found a decent park, left the rental car with his luggage, and entered the building. After checking in, he situated himself in his room and was ready to relax and prepare for the weekend. The conference would adjourn on the following Monday. Once Fred was situated in his room, he decided to take a trip to the dining hall. He only purchased a small snack because a larger dinner would be served at the conference's opening reception later that evening. As he sipped some coffee and ate a bagel, the presence of huge windows surrounding the hall allowed him to view a portion of a snow-covered forest of pine trees scattered everywhere, with snowflakes falling. It was like a picture in motion. It almost was like he was outside in the wind-driven snow. But two huge fireplaces with logs cracking and embers glowing provided more than sufficient heat inside the dining area. Soft music being played assisted in giving Fred much comfort and appreciation, of this unique winter wonderland scene. Soon, Fred would retire to his room and spend a little time relaxing before attending an opening reception later that night. The remainder of the conference would be spent in business meetings. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Sandra kept her word that she would come to Minneapolis on the weekend of Fred's conference. Her intent was not to visit her sister because she did not have a sister that lived there. She lied about it just to have an excuse to be in the same city as Fred, away from his wife, Maggie. Sandra simply was following Fred to be closer to him. While Sandra worked in the church, she didn't agree with many of its dogmas. One that she largely disregarded was that physical love was sacred, reserved for only two people in matrimony, body, spirit, and soul. Sandra believed in the body part of the equation, and it was easy for her to do because it revolved around her craving in to satisfy materialistic desires that the soul and spirit, in her mind, could not quench. She believed that only the physical senses could satisfy the needs of the flesh, and because of that, it was a prerequisite to a happy life. Sandra had yet to be reborn and to recognize spiritual things, such as the significance of the Godhead that Maggie sometimes talked to her about. That part of her being, the soul and spirit part, was desensitized in favor of accommodating her fleshly desires to be with Fred. And that's what she saw in Fred, an opportunity to accommodate those desires. Like Fred the day before, Sandra had a smooth flight to Minneapolis, but she came from her home city of Detroit. When she arrived, the weather had not changed from the previous day. Like Fred when he left Chicago on the day before, the next day when Sandra flew from Detroit, the weather was very poor, with lots of snow and wind. Conditions had not improved once the plane landed. The snow continued to fall and the wind was howling. Not only were there similarities in the weather, even their ability to navigate to their destination in downtown Minneapolis was similar. Both Fred and Sandra had a GPS on their cell phones to assist them. The technology was no use to them, however. Fred's phone had malfunctioned and Sandra's phone was mistakenly left within her luggage. They had to rely on road signs to direct them to their place of lodging. One difference between Sandra's trip and that of Fred's was she had made reservations in a hotel in downtown, but away from the campus where he was. Another more significant difference, as it turned out, involved Sandra's travel from the airport. Fred took the correct route as he approached the fork in the road. He veered onto the Minnesota Expressway and continued safely to his place of lodging in downtown Minneapolis. The next day, Sandra failed to take the right road to her destination when she came to the fork that Fred had approached the day before. As fate would have it, Sandra would take a different route as she drove along towards her destination of downtown Minneapolis. She became disoriented when she found herself in the middle of very poor weather conditions. Sandra said to herself,
"It sure is bad out here. The wind blowing harder than ever, and these snow flurries make it impossible to see the signs. Oh my, can't wait to get where I'm going."
The wintry scene appeared as a mist of white that spread along both sides of the roadway, as far as the eye could see. When Sandra reached that fork in the road, unlike Fred the day before, she misread the signs and veered to the right that took her onto Damascus Way, the road that led to St. Paul, separated only by the Mississippi River. Sandra was unaware at the time that she had taken a wrong turn, going towards St. Paul. She traveled for about 10 minutes before she realized she was going the wrong way. After stopping at a local service station to ask for directions, Sandra turned around. While still on Damascus Way, Sandra had reversed directions and started heading back towards the Minnesota Expressway, which would lead her to Minneapolis and her place of lodging. As Sandra carefully drove along, she came to a forested area and saw a road sign that read, "Beware of deer." She never thought about the possibility of hitting a deer. She only focused on getting on the road that would take her to Minneapolis, where she had a room reserved at a downtown hotel. But when she saw that road sign about the danger of deer, she said to herself,
"My land, I've already turned down the wrong road. I hope nothing else goes wrong on this trip."
Despite seeing the sign, a short time later, Sandra had become forgetful of the possibility of running into deer. She was most concerned about taking the right road to her destination of Minneapolis. Before arriving at that fork in the road, where she realized she had made a wrong turn, Sandra saw not just one deer, but several of the animals appear just a few feet in front of her, off the side of the road. While she was concerned, Sandra had not panicked yet. Within seconds, as she continued driving forward, at least five or six of them darted in front of her vehicle. But it was too late for her to react and apply brakes, which would have created another problem for her on a slippery road surface.
"Oh my God, I can't believe I almost ran into those deer."
Sandra yelled, then screamed, expecting her car to ram into at least one of the animals as they crossed the road. She just knew she would crash into one of those things. The possibility of causing severe damage to her car and getting injured was overwhelming. Fortunately, Sandra didn't panic and continued to drive deliberately in such poor weather conditions, maybe only about 40 miles per hour. Sandra didn't have time to stop and even slow down much. In only a second or two, more deer galloped from the forest. They dashed in front of her, crossing Damascus Way. While Sandra was still concerned, she remained calm and continued to drive carefully, but obviously shaken from almost hitting the deer she saw crossing the road in front of her. She then glanced in her rearview mirror and saw at least two more deer moving past the back of her vehicle. Apparently, she had just missed hitting them. Amazingly, she passed through that herd of deer as though they were invisible. While amazingly still composed, Sandra witnessed no damage done to her car. She didn't hit any of them.
Phew. Sure was lucky not to hit any of those things,
Sandra said in relief, disregarding the possibility of divine intervention in the situation. She was amazed when she viewed in her rearview mirror the last of the deer having galloped across the road. With that incident behind her, the only concern Sandra had now was to navigate her car through the mixture of rain and snow to reach the road that would ultimately take her to her destination of Minneapolis. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. As Sandra continued her drive along Damascus Way, she found that it was more difficult to keep her car on the road. The snow flurries grew more intense and the traffic was much heavier than before. She passed a sign saying, "Minnesota Expressway, 20 miles. She was hopeful that when she got there, the road would be much wider than Damascus Way. At the further thought, She was sure of it.
How silly of me. After all, it is the expressway. Of course it should be wider.
She continued to think. Before Sandra could get to the expressway, she almost lost control of her vehicle amidst the wintry conditions. The scary thing for Sandra as she drove along was the absence of guardrails that kept vehicles from tumbling down an embankment toward the ravine several feet below the road on both sides. After the deer incident, it seemed to be smooth sailing for Sandra despite the continued poor weather conditions. She had decreased her speed after almost losing control of her car a few miles back. Snow was all around her on the grasses and trees of a heavily forested area off the road on both sides. With below freezing temperatures, the road itself was free of any accumulation. The below freezing temperatures caused another problem, the formation of what is known as black ice, something that could be extremely dangerous to motorists who drive over it. Because usually it cannot easily be seen by the naked eye, driving over a patch of dry ice could easily cause a motorist to lose control of the vehicle. Sandra remembered studying about the black ice phenomenon when she took the driver's exam to get her license. She did remember from her training not to apply her brakes if her car skidded on an ice-covered surface to avoid the brakes locking up and the motorist losing control of the vehicle. As Sandra approached that fork in the road that led to the expressway, she came near the end of Damascus Way, where there was an overpass extending high above the Mississippi River. That's when suddenly her car began to swirl. Sandra had driven over a spot of black ice. At that point, Sandra did the unthinkable. Unlike her encounter with the deer a few miles back, she panicked and applied the brakes, action she thought would help her regain control of her vehicle. But the opposite thing happened. The wheels of her car became locked, and the vehicle continued to skid off the side of the road just prior to her vehicle reaching the overpass. Within a split second, she noticed a steep embankment that her car was heading towards. Then she screamed.
Oh my God! I'm going down! Help me, God!
Now she was unable to control the car, and it soon began to skid down the embankment into a ravine. Sandra was conscious of seeing tree branches and brush scraping against her windows as her car tumbled down the embankment. There was a screeching sound that was so loud she couldn't hear herself think. Sandra didn't remember anything else after that. Soon, Sandra's car would be several feet below the road, finally coming to a rest at the bottom of the ravine, not far from the river. During the horrendous accident, Sandra became tucked inside her car and unconscious, unaware of where she had ended up. She didn't remain there long in that unconscious state, as emergency personnel soon came to give assistance. It was a challenging situation for them, largely because the vehicle was not easily accessible. Because the vehicle had become lodged among the trees and brush of the forest, not to mention having to navigate through tons of accumulated snow covering the ground, made rescue efforts very difficult. Soon, after getting into the vehicle, attendants carefully took Sandra out of the vehicle and carried her to a waiting ambulance. Then she was rushed to receive medical care. Now, Sandra was with paramedics, who would take her to a local hospital where she would be looked after by health professionals. She would eventually regain consciousness. Thank goodness another motorist had seen the accident happen and immediately called for help. Let's take another break and we'll be right back. Welcome back. Eventually, rescue personnel dislodged Sandra's vehicle, but because of the force of the collision, the engine had been thrown from the vehicle several yards away from the accident site. Now in a local hospital, Sandra's next conscious moment involved facing a crew of doctors and other attendants.
"Where am I?"
she asked, seeming to be floating in and out of consciousness. "Miss Hughes," one of the doctors addressed her formally.
"Yes, doctor. Let me know my situation."
Then he went on to describe her condition. "Well, we have some good news for you and some bad news. First, the bad news is that your legs were crushed severely. But the good news is that during emergency surgery, we were able to reconnect all of the veins and arteries in that area of your body, and we were also able to mend the bones in your legs that were crushed and broken." The doctor further explained, "You will eventually be able to walk normally, but you will need a wheelchair at first. Then, after your legs regain some strength, you will only need the use of crutches for a few weeks. After that, with continued rehab, you will be able to walk again, but you'll have a slight limp until the area becomes completely healed." Sandra felt overwhelmed by the news. Then she responded by saying to the attending physician, with a bit of sarcasm,
"So, the good news is that I'll be in a wheelchair? Is that what you're saying, doctor? Is that what you're saying? My legs were crushed? Oh my God, I'll be a cripple. And you tell me there's some good news?"
Sandra desperately desired for the doctor to give her more encouraging news, but it was news that the doctor did not have to give her. She continued to repeat some of what she heard already being said by the doctors, largely in derision and with tears freely flowing down her cheeks.
"I'm a cripple! I'm a cripple!"
The doctors tried to calm her. "No, Miss Hughes, as we said, with proper rehab, you'll be walking fine again in a few months," one of them said. Sandra grudgingly accepted the doctor's prognosis, and she did begin to calm herself, accepting the reality of the situation. She began to prepare mentally to do whatever was necessary to get better. Needless to say, Sandra was devastated by the news. She paid attention only on the difficulties ahead of her, instead of realizing how fortunate she was just to have survived the accident. When Sandra was ready to leave the hospital, a medical assistant indicated they had a charter plane available to take her home, where she could then work on her rehabilitation. As Sandra spent a little more time in the hospital, she tried to be positive, saying to herself,
"I'll be back on my feet in no time."
Yes, Sandra was intent on completing her recovery. She would patiently accept her rehabilitation. What she couldn't be patient about was her continued desire to see Fred. She had already called Maggie to tell her about her accident. Sandra figured that Maggie would call and tell Fred the news about her condition, and upon doing that, Fred would be compelled to come and see her. After talking with Sandra, Maggie did call Fred to inform him of what happened. When Maggie told him of Sandra's accident, Fred's response was predictable. He was stunned to hear that news and responded with a series of questions. "Sandra? In an accident? Wow. Well, how is she? Is she all right?" Then Maggie answered him and said, "I think so, Fred, but maybe you should contact her since you two are right there in Minneapolis. I'm sure she'll be glad to hear from you." "Well, okay, Mag, and thanks for the information, and I'll be seeing you when I get back," Fred said to his wife. After learning of Sandra's accident, Fred did contact her. Soon she would get the opportunity to talk to him firsthand before taking her trip back to Detroit. Fred arranged to leave his conference and go pay Sandra a visit. He soon arrived at the hospital where she was. After learning of her location there, Fred went to her room and entered. When Sandra saw him walk in, she immediately perked up, being temporarily relieved of her depression. She said to him,
"Hello, Fred. I didn't think we'd see each other with me in this position. I'm really surprised to see you."
"Hello, Sandra. Meg called me and told me about what happened, and I was so sorry to hear about your accident." "Yeah, Meg gave me some of the details. But listen, just follow the doctor's orders and you'll be fine."
"Oh, thank you, Fred. And why are you way over there? You could come over here and sit on the bed, and I can give you more of the details, and I won't have to scream."
"Well, okay." As Fred got closer to Sandra, he could smell the aroma of a fragrance that was unfamiliar to him. She then grabbed his hand and explained how she felt.
"Fred, I'm so fortunate to be alive. When I went down that embankment on Damascus Way, I thought that I was a goner. I just blanked out and don't remember anything else until I woke up here at the hospital."
"Yes, Sandra. Like I said, Matt gave me some of those same details of what happened. And let me tell you, you were really fortunate to have gotten through that situation."
"Well, Fred, I'm not totally out of the woods yet. I have quite a bit of rehab to do."
"I know, Sandra. And that's why it's important that you follow doctor's orders. And remember, I'll be there for you. Let's take another break, and when we return, we'll close the show." Welcome back. Sandra interpreted those last few words from Fred that he would be there for her as a license to continue her devious pursuit of him. The accident and Sandra's resulting injuries did not diminish her desire to be with Fred. Unfortunately, in her case, unlike the Damascus Road story told in the Bible, Sandra's Damascus Way experience did not result in a total change of her spirit. Yes, God may knock on our door at some point in our lives with a desire for us to open it and let him in. Our actions behind that door may be in the form of coming against God's kingdom through the persecution of the saints, like Saul before he was converted and became the Apostle Paul, or through the satisfying of the flesh, like Sandra. But it is up to us to open the door and let him in when God speaks to us. Saul responded and opened the door to his spirit when God spoke to him on the Damascus Road. But Sandra's misfortune did not result in a similar response from her. She apparently did not turn from her wicked ways because of the accident she experienced. While she desired physical healing, her door was still closed spiritually because she continued to have a desire to be with Fred. Meanwhile, Fred would soon leave the hospital to complete the attendance at his conference and then return home to Chicago. As for Sandra, she soon would leave Minneapolis as well, going back home to Detroit and to recuperate from her injuries, and most likely to continue to think about being with Fred. Well, that's all for today. In closing, I'd like to say, and would like you to remember, that whatever you may be going through, whether it's good or bad, just keep in mind that there's always more good things coming your way. We'll see you the next time.